legally, we aren't protected the same way as a priest is. Like, let's say if you do a confession with a priest, legally, they don't have to testify against you. Well, sponsors aren't considered immune to testimony. So you may want to be careful about confessing murders or something like that to a sponsor, because if it ever happens that you're put in front of a court situation, you know, the sponsor is not protected by immunity from testimony, you know. So you also have to be careful about what you want to say. It says later in this that parts of your story you might want to tell to someone who might understand. And there may be parts of your story that you might want to tell to a priest or something like that. To the best of my knowledge, I've never murdered anybody. But being a blackout drinker, you know, how do you know what you don't know? But the fact of the matter is I didn't have any information. I didn't feel comfortable about going to my sponsor. But you don't necessarily have to go to a sponsor. Sometimes you can go to a closed-mouthed, understanding friend. It also tells us in here that if we're a member of a religious body that has confession as part of its religious ritual, well, we may want to, and it even says we must go to these people and do that also. So basically, it's saying if you're Catholic, part of your fifth step procedure will be doing it with a priest. Now, that certainly doesn't mean you don't have to do it with, or you can't do it with a sponsor also, but that's the wording in the book. One of the things that Dave and I have gotten into recently is what's known as multiple fist-stepping. We talked about it a little bit last night. Let me tell you what my experience was with this last multiple fist-step. Dave was there. I was reading from my inventory. He was reading from his inventory, and we had two of our sponsees there. It was like being in the AA Inquisition. You know what I mean? Like, I would say, I'm resentful at so-and-so, and this is why, and I would start getting hit by these guys. And I'm telling you, it pulled out some amazing truth. I consider myself an honest guy. You know what I mean? But when I'm in the middle of inventory, it's amazing the lies I can put down on paper that I'm not really even aware of. I mean, I'm trying to be honest. And I put down this stuff, this garbage, and then I sit in this fist-up atmosphere, and they go, is it possible that you could have blah, 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 blah? You know, don't you think that you might have been motivated by blah, blah, blah? And I'm telling you, one of the things about a fist-up that you want to go for is you want to have your ego deflated. You want to walk out of there kind of like a beaten puppy. You know what I mean? You really do. You want to get to a point where you have recognized the human condition in yourself to such a point that you realize that you're human. And the ego is over here. You know what I mean? And I'll tell you, my ego cracked in this last series of fist-step meetings. It did. And I was at a very, very open point in my recovery to move on to the rest of the work. Because anything about me knowing all about myself or anything about me being really virtuous or what, that was all beaten out of me, and I was completely human. You know what I mean? And I was really able to move on from there.
What Chris is talking about is, he's using expressions like beaten, you know, this is on the emotional level. It's done with love. If you get the opportunity to hear somebody's fist step, it's a spiritual thing. We do it just like we do this meeting here. We sit down and we meditate for a minute. We invite God in to show us the truth. I actually ask God for a prayer to speak through me. I also ask God for another prayer right in the beginning. I put it on the table that I forget everything that transpires that I hear in that room when I leave, so that I don't have the slightest opportunity to share something that I heard in that room. You know, it's called giving each other spiritual license. We give each other spiritual license when we do multiple fist steps like that. And I'm basically telling these guys, hey, I want your help, I need your help, and I'm giving you license enough to love me, not to kill me. Tell me the truth. Don't use it as a weapon to hurt me, but but tell me the God's honest truth so that I can see the truth, so there's some hope of a connection. And the closest analogy I can bring it back to is it brings you right back. Remember that description I talked about slapping the guy with the hopelessness in step one? The exact same thing should be happening in step five. Only it's coming from you. You're recognizing it at the deepest level inside yourself that you, warts and all, you got the stuff and it's yours. You're willing to stand up to the plate and say, you know what? I own this stuff. This is my character defects. This is what I do. These are my fears. Well, what the hell am I going to do about it? And because you have this hopelessness, in the beginning it's the hopelessness to get you to start the journey. Now you have the hopelessness, but what else do you have? You have power. You have power. And remember the second step proposition. Either God is everything or he is nothing. You have unlimited source of power. You have this higher power, and you don't have to finish the rest of the process. It's his job. You just have to go out and be the actor. You have to be the agent. He will work through you. He will give you the power to do the amends. He will give you the power to face this stuff. And remember what I said in the beginning of the fourth step. You are not here to learn how to deal with this stuff. This is not play. We're not going to go out and learn how to play with our character defects and you know, they're like fuzzy little toys to some of us. We get a misshapen pleasure out of it, as it says in the 12 and 12, by swallowing in the messy bog. That is not what this process is about. It is about facing the stuff and being rid of it. Cast the demons out. You're going to face the stuff in the fifth step. These people are going to show you what's in there at the core level, and then you're going to humble yourself to God. And you're going to go back, and the real healing takes place in the quiet hour afterwards, because you go back and you thank God for knowing him better. And now, after we get done talking about this, we'll talk about the quiet hour afterwards. It'll make a lot more sense of what's going on. But during the process, it is. It's like pulling teeth. It's like being in the dentist chair, you know. You got this cavity. It's killing you. You know it hurts like hell, yet you still don't want to get in the chair and have the guy take it out. You know at the very end that it's going to be better for you in the long run. You know that the pain is going to stop. But while he's in there with those pliers, man, it hurts, and you want him to stop, you know. That's why you need people in there that understand, you know, that are there based off of love. And it really can be a lot of fun, particularly when your ego jumps up and says, well, yeah, I admit that I was wrong here, but I don't know what the man, you know. And then the guys look at you and go, is it possible that you're afraid of making amends to this guy? And you're like, no. I'm like, well, is it possible that your God isn't all-powerful, that you're really agnostic about this? And then the spiritual man jumps up and column three comes back and you're kind of going, oh, no, I'm not this, you know. But you face it and you walk through it. It becomes part of you, you know, and it's a cleansing that there's, until it's the rose. Until you've experienced it, how can I describe it? My words are not doing justice to it at all. Try it, experience it, and you will be free. You will be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence.
It truly is a great experience. And when Dave and I were involved with it, it was also a lot of fun. I certainly don't want it to sound like it was like this torturous process. It was a lot of fun. The pain that I got was recognizing getting rid of a lot of the illusions about myself, like Mr. AA and Mr. Spiritual and Mr. Know-It-All. I mean, you do a really good fifth step, and that's going to be beaten out of you. But we had a lot of fun about with this. We were laughing hysterically for probably days going through it all. Anyway, let's go over here to the fifth step instructions. All right, you're ready to do a fifth step. Here are some instructions. You decide who's to hear your story. And they give you some instructions about who that should be.
Page 17 of the guide.
It should be a closed mouth, understanding friend. It should be someone who fully understands and approves of what you're driving at. I don't really believe that it should be just done with some stranger that doesn't understand what we're doing. Because what can happen is you can start getting into some real detail in the fifth step, and the person will go, oh, you don't have to go any further. I know what you mean. You know, and they'll try to stop you. And when you really need to go forward, you can do it with some of these people, like the doctor, psychologist, and family member. But remember that the big book was written back when there was only two groups of alcoholics. And the book was published really to be sent out upon the tides of alcoholism. It was really meant to be sent to Duluth to some alcoholic for them to use as a guidebook to start Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. You know, so they're giving some instructions about who to find. And it also says if you can't find somebody, you may be able to postpone. And I like the example I use with Dave. One of Dave's military adventures is to fly to the North Pole for things with the reserves. And I asked him one day, I go, if you were looking for somebody to do a fist step with on the North Pole, would you be able to? And there's an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting on the North Pole, right?
On Thursday. You know the passage in the Big Book, if you go to the North Pole, you know, or the Greenland ice cap, and an Eskimo will come walking over the hill and ruin your day? Thursdays at Chile, Greenland, there's an AA meeting. It's a great meeting. Come on up.
It won't be the Eskimo. It'll be Dave coming at you with the Big Book, you know? So really this reason for, like, postponement, I don't think it's valid anymore. I mean, if you're honest about it, you're going to be able to find somebody to do the fist step with.
There's only two cases I know that it's a valid thing. One is a merchant marine, somebody that's out for a month out on the ocean, and there may not be somebody else on the vessel. The other is a submariner, a guy who's in a submarine underneath the water. You know, they're out, you know, you're locked in a nuclear sub, you're sitting underneath the ice cap for a month or two, you may not have a chance. But, you know, as soon as those boats get to port, Ollie oxen free, the gig's up. You know, there's people. You can do it. Let's get to it.
They may even have a chaplain on board. You know, you do it with the chaplain.
Absolutely.
Who knows? But anyway, you waste no time. I like that. So you don't wait for like 2 or 3 years to find the right person, you know, somebody that you identify with. You waste no time. We have a written inventory. We're prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we're about to do and why we have to do it. Even when I'm going to my sponsor or somebody that understands, I like to sit down and explain why I'm doing the fist step.
I make guys do that, regardless. It's part of the... Remember I said in the very beginning of this that you've got to bring all these steps back to drinking? That's part of what this is about. I've done... I don't know how many fist steps I've done, but I've done a lot of them. Every single time, I need to sit down there and humble myself, and it's so that I hear myself say it. I am here because I'm on a life and death errand. My life, whether I drink again or not depends on whether I'm going to do this. And it would be so easy for me to get in there and just be kind of cavalier, and because I hear so many fist steps and I do so many of them, just kind of sashay through it. It's not what this process is about. This is life and death, you know. And it's the difference between spiritual pride and arrogance or humility under God, you know. So I go to the, and then when I have somebody come to me, I sit them down, we read the passages out of the Big Book, straight out of the Big Book, and I say, now why are you here? You know, and they tell me why they're here. They're here because they're on a life and death errand. I want to make sure they know. And then I said, why do you want me to hear it? And they look at me and they say, because you're a closed mouth, understanding friend. And they said, great, let's get to it. Boom, and we go. You know, it's a wonderful, wonderful experience. But remember what I said last night. If you get the privilege to hear one, treat it like you have their life in your hands, because you do. This is really important stuff.
Be sure that they realize that you are on a life and death errand. I mean, that is how important this is. If we may not overcome drinking if we don't do a fifth step, it very much is a life and death errand. We pocket our pride and we go to it. That's probably the most difficult instruction for me, because I'm a very prideful person and I want to look good. And God forbid I do this inventory where I look like a cheap, petty, ridiculous person, you know. But you have to do it anyway. We illuminate every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Let's take a look at returning home. I always ask the people that do fist steps with me to do this. Sometimes it may not be home. I live out in a town that's pretty far away from everything else. But we have a church across the street. And sometimes I'll send the person over to sit in the church. If it's summertime, we live by a river. And it's really peaceful. It's really nice. I'll send them down to sit by the river, but I want them to do the 1 hour of returning home right after we get done with the fifth step. That is one of the times where you will be as close to God as you can get. I know it from my own experience. Let's read the paragraph. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. There's a prayer instruction. Taking this book down from the shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps, right in the beginning of how it works.
Page 59.
Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we've omitted anything, for we're building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. And there's another construction reference. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? Have we done our job up to step 5? We really, really have to ask ourselves this. If we've omitted anything, we may be building a foundation, or we may be building a wall that's going to crash down on us. If we can answer to our satisfaction, then we look at step six.
Now, what does this look like? A lot of people go home with these instructions and they still say, well, I really don't know what to do. You know, here's what I do. I take the book off the shelf, I hit my knees, and I ask God to come into me again, you know, and help me to see if I've omitted anything, if I've missed anything in this process. I go through the steps, just like I went through with you with step one. I go back to step one and I say, what is step one? I read it. I break it down piece by piece in my mind. Am I clear on the we? Am I clear on that I've made the concession deep down within myself, that I'm powerless over alcohol before, after, and during my drinking? I go through the steps to talk about step two. Am I really clear that I'm in this process to seek a relationship with a higher power, that God is everything or is he nothing? What is my choice to be? I look up the reference for the foundation stone. I look up the reference for the cement on page 17. I look for the cornerstone. I look at the keystone. And I put those in reference, and I make sure that my 1, 2, 3 are in order. Right? Then I take my fourth step, I've got those sheets, and I sit down, and I look at those sheets and say, is there any other resentments? And I get quiet. And I just wait for God to talk to me. He may talk in 30 seconds, or it may take me 5 minutes. I don't know. You know? I'll just wait. And if something hits me, I write it down. I don't analyze it there. I just write it down. You know? And at the end of the hour, I'll take a look at what I've written, and I may have to go back and write some more columns and go back and do a little bit more fifth step work. You know? Now, as somebody who hears a lot of fifth steps, I hear a lot of fifth steps. At least one a week. You know? There was a period last month where, I mean, maybe in 3 months' time period, I probably heard 30 fifth steps. It takes a hell of a lot of my time to do fifth steps, and I do a lot of them. I do the quiet hour afterwards. I'm hearing it, but there's something about hearing. So you take it on. That's part of why the weight gets. It's like, oh, you know what it's like? You've already experienced it. You go to an AA meeting, you got a burden, you put it on the table, and you heard the expression, everybody takes a piece of it, and you feel lighter when you leave. Same thing happens in a fifth step. The guy brings me all this crap, I help him see the truth. When I walk out the door, some of that I'm carrying. I go to a quiet hour. I sit down, and it may not be a full hour, but I go back and sit with God and say, thank you, God, for helping me to be an instrument for you, for showing me this guy's truth. Help me to forget it, relieve me, remove it, and I give it up to God. And usually, in hearing somebody's fifth step, you will see your own truth. I see something in me through him, and now I got work to do. So I give it up right then in that quiet hour. When I'm doing my quiet hour, give it back to God. You know, one of the catchphrases I always use, I wait for God to tell me. It's either in the beginning of the fifth step or at the end of the fifth step. I look the guy straight in the eye and I make sure we're looking eye to eye, and I say to him, is there anything that you're carrying that you're going to take to the grave? Let's put it on the table. I usually used to do it always in the beginning. I used to start out with, let's get that off the table first. And I'll go, well, no. You know? And I say, now wait a minute, let's make sure, you know, murders, no, rapes, robberies, physical violence, sexual abuse, we go through, and you'd be amazed how many times you pull it out like a bad tooth, and that usually opens the flood, you know, the dam opens up, they break down, they get that stuff out, and I've heard it all. I mean, I've heard some really bizarre stuff, and it's a gift. It really is a gift to have people share that stuff with you, even the bad stuff. You know, I had a guy come to me, he talked to me about being a nurse and all whacked out on heroin, and he'd go around and inject stuff in people's IDs just to see what happened for fun. He killed dozens of people, you know. How do you deal with that, you know? He got free of that stuff, you know. I had to do a couple quiet hours after that to get rid of that stuff. Anyway, it's powerful, powerful stuff. But don't miss the experience of it. Whatever you do, don't miss this. This is the real deal. Step five. Oh, it's a God shot. Let you know who and what you are. This is the best stuff this program has to offer. And if you don't feel like you found the fourth dimension doing this deal, maybe you haven't, but you're on the way. And I guarantee you, if you go through step nine, you'll be there. World will be utopia. You will know what this program is about. You have found heaven on earth. That's the way it used to read in the big book. Heaven on earth. And they made him take it. The Catholics made him take it out. And that's why it says utopia now. Because it's as close as we could get to heaven on earth. You know? Anyway.
It's an amazing process. I'm also very privileged to hear a lot of fifth steps. And so I have a lot of people that I'm really close to. Because if you do a fist up with somebody, you're entirely honest with somebody, you can get very, very close to that individual. So I have a lot of really true friends today. And that's an amazing thing. One other thing that I explained, yeah, it is. It's really amazing.
And it didn't even cost him a six-pack.
No. But another thing that I let the people know as they're going off to their quiet hour is I let them know where I'm going to be. Because if in meditation they come across anything that they've held back or forgot about, or maybe in meditation they get the courage to drag out that take it to the grave item, I let them know where I am. You know, they can call me or I'm at home also. So I've never had anybody take me up on that. So we'll see.
There are some things that you will hear that you don't know what to do with. From hearing a fifth step, I had one the other day. A guy came to me and he dropped some stuff on me that I'd never heard before. And the thing that turned me so mad much was it was tradition violations within AA. And it was some really inappropriate stuff. And it involved his sponsor sleeping with his wife. And, I mean, it was some really... It touched me. To violate that kind of sanctity... Sponsor to sponsee. I couldn't carry that. I had to go to somebody and say, hey, it was harder for me than hearing somebody say, hey, I murdered somebody. That's easy for me, you know? Oh, yeah, I was doing a drug deal, I stuck the gun in a guy's face and blew his head off. I've heard that a bunch of times. That doesn't bother me like it does. When I see what goes on in these rooms, what we do to each other in sobriety. I had to get that out. So I went to somebody in confidence and said, I didn't use names, but I said, you know, I heard this stuff. What do I do with it? Gave me a chance to give it to God, you know, again. And as you can see, it's still with me. But it's a pleasure. It's a blessing. I'm in touch today. I feel today. What a reality. That I can cry in front of a group of people. So what? It's God. I have God with me today. You know? That I was able to help somebody is a pleasure. It's a gift. You know? Don't be surprised. Don't let it scare you. Go through it. What, you know, like Robert Frost says, the best way through it is walk right through it. You know? Enjoy this stuff. This is life. This is what we signed on for. We didn't want to die. AAs are the ones who are afraid to die. The easy way out is to blow your head off or drink yourself to death. We're the ones who can't kill ourselves. We love life too much, but we can't live in life with the pain. Walk through it and see what's on the other side. This is the best stuff there is. You know, it's delightful. You know, but don't be surprised if God throws you a little loop, you know, and it knocks you off the top. You know, it's my spiritual arrogance. Well, I've heard it all. Every once in a while, something will knock you for a loop. And you better be spiritually sound. You better be ready for it because it'll shake you to the core. It'll shake your sobriety loose. It'll get you out of the rut that you're living in and off the laurels that you're sitting on. We don't care about the fifth step you did 6 months ago. Where are you today? We don't care about the nightly review you did yesterday. Where are you today? It's all about this 24 hours and this spirituality, this faith for the next 24 hours.
It's an amazing process. Very rarely do I have to go for help with somebody that's done a fifth step, but I'll give you an example of one I did. Several years ago, somebody came up to me to do a fist up with me, and the resentment part was about 20 minutes, the fear part was about 10 minutes, and the sex harms was about 8.5 hours. You know what I mean? Like this guy was a serious dude, and it touched me in areas where I just didn't know where to go with it. I was boggled, and you know, I let the guy go do his quiet hour and everything. And I came back to him. I did some meditation and I came back to him and I said, look, I'm going to recommend something to you. There's a guy I know. What I want you to do is I want you to do a fifth step, the exact same fifth step you gave me. I want you to give to this individual because I think that he can help you in this area. You know, I don't have any experience with like an 8.5 hour sex harms list, you know. So, you know, you may do better to like talk to this individual, and they did. And then all three of us got together, and we were able to give this person some further direction. you know, but I needed help with it. I mean, I was blocked. I couldn't go any further. But rather than betray the person's confidence in any way, I went to him and I asked him to please just do that fifth step over again with somebody who's like more qualified with those in that area, you know what I mean? And so that's what we did. And it was very, very helpful to the individual. Let's see, we have a quiet hour prayer down at the bottom. What I'd like to do is I'd like to do the quiet hour prayer. So let's get in touch with the Spirit here. God, thank you for giving me the strength, faith, and courage I needed to get through my fifth step. I thank you from the bottom of my heart for helping me to know you better by showing me what has been blocking me from you. Father, please show me if I've omitted anything to help me to honestly see if my stones are properly in place or if I have skimped in any area of this work. Somebody, one of the ancient wise men said one time that sin is that which blocks you off from God. I love that saying. Anything that blocks me off from God today is not in my best interest. It's not. The closer I get to God, the closer I feel wonderful and at one with the universe, you know. A lot of times those feelings are fleeting, but that's certainly the area I'm aiming for. And, you know, this whole process is trying to get rid of the roadblocks in the way to our happiness, you know, in the way to having a meaningful life. And trust in the process, and if you come to a point where, should I say it? Or shouldn't I say it? Okay?
Step 6, page 76, colon 1. Yes, question. Sure.
Question.
Yes.
It's not the guy that you guys didn't read to either. What about the fifth step promises?
Fifth step promises?
Oh,
good,
yeah.
Good question. Yeah, I don't know why I didn't put them in there. Fifth step promises, 75, colon 2. Comes right after this. I'll read the whole paragraph. It says, we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. And listen to these promises. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, that's just like the if, you know, it's conditional, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel that we are on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. You know?
Great promises.
Outstanding stuff.
Yeah. And ask your sponsor or whoever, or ask yourself after you've done a fifth step. You know, pull this book down and ask yourself if these promises have manifested themselves in you. I've never heard anybody say no.
Yeah, usually it comes out, one of them usually comes out if they can look you in the eye. And they'll come to you, it usually takes a week or so, and they'll come back to you and go, I feel so good. I can look people in the eye. I'm not looking at my shoes anymore. You know, and you're like, yeah, I know. It's in the book. And it just, it's a neat thing to watch somebody grow. You know, what a gift to see a closed, beat up old, withered vine sprout and flower. It's a gift.
My first experience with a fifth step many, many years ago was with my first sponsor, and this was back before there was a lot of big book instruction. It was basically, to the best of my ability, a life story with all the little gory details, you know. It was the best I could do at the time. And after I got done, I had always had a feeling like I was a piece of dirt, you know. I always had that really low self. I was a piece of dirt. I was a special piece of dirt. I was not any old run-of-the-mill piece of dirt, mind you, you know. I had some amazing traits for being a piece of dirt. But I was a piece of dirt. And after you exploded with these character defects, he goes, you were caught up in something that you were powerless over. He goes, right now you're really trying to do what you can to recover from that. You know, give yourself a break. And that was the first time in my life that I didn't feel like a piece of dirt. It was the first time. I finally started to feel like I was okay. It's an amazing experience for me.
Chris just reminded me of something. Remember what Bob Bazan says, any step worth taking is worth taking wrong. My first fifth step, nothing written. I saw this old guy at a meeting and he was talking and I liked what I heard. He had seemed to be a kind of a spiritual guy. And I said, hey, can I do a fist step with you? He's like, sure. And I said, where do you live? He says, oh, I live next to the church in town. So I show up, I knock on the door, and he shows up at the door, and he's got this funny collar on. And I said, wait, where are you going? You're going to a costume party? And he says, no, I'm a priest. I just about died. I was so prejudiced against religion and churches and anything, God put him in my life. My second inventory I did with Leo, I wrote on the back of an envelope about 10 minutes before I went to fist step with him because I knew I had to have something written this time. You know? It doesn't have to be done right. It gave me enough relief to keep going in this program. You know? I didn't start writing column inventory until several inventories into this thing. You know? Remember, this is the beginning of a lifetime process. Alright? Step six. If we can answer to our satisfaction, then we look at step six. There's three instructions that we're given. One, are you ready to let God remove from you all things which are, you have admitted are objectionable? Sit down. I have a guy sit down, and he meditates on that for a couple minutes. Is he ready to have God remove all these things? All right? And you notice it doesn't say willing. A lot of times I hear people misquote this sucker. In step six, you don't have to be willing. You have to be ready. All right? That means you get up to the starting line. Willing means you're at the finish line. Yeah, I'm willing. Okay, God, let's go take them. She's got to be ready for what the next step in this process is going to be. Instruction two, can he, capital H, now take them everyone, take them all, everyone? You know? They're moving you slowly through this race to get to the finish line, piece by piece. Instruction number three, if we still cling to something that we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. There's where the willing comes. We go back to the power. We now have a power greater than ourselves in our lives. Let's use the power. If you're not willing, ask God to be willing. So that tells me, for as ask God, there must be another prayer. And I give you the six-step prayer there, you know. If the guy balks, you've heard me say it enough times this weekend, bring it back to drinking. I bring everything back to drinking. People get sick of hearing me talk about bringing it back to drinking. Any time in this process, after we've taken the third-step prayer, anybody, and I don't care how much sobriety they have, they come to me and tell me they're not willing to do something, I literally take a bottle of booze and sit in front of them and say, which is easier? Which is easier? You get very willing very quickly. If you've conceded to your innermost self, if you've been slapped with the hopelessness, you recoil from that as if from a hot flame. You kind of go, whoa, what are you doing? Are you crazy? What are you doing putting that in front of me? You know, and I'm like, what's the matter? Is your God all, is he all powerful? Is he everything or is he nothing? That has nothing to hurt. That bottle there cannot hurt you. You know? You have to take the top off and put it down your throat. But it reminds them where he is. They get willing very quick with me. Either that or they stop the process right there. And what has happened? They've missed something on their fourth step. There's still a hold of fear. Fear is still blocking them off. They haven't found the connection. You know? I don't just let them walk out the door right then. I take them back to the fourth step. We start fourth step. I start asking them questions about fear. What did you miss? What needs to come out, right? I'm taking off my AA hat here. It's not in the big book. Some phenomenal stuff from hearing so many fifth steps, and I didn't put it in the guide because it doesn't come out of the big book. One of the things that I did was I started noticing that we all have basic character defects right down the line. Selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, fear, arrogance, pride, sloth, gluttony, lust, physical violence, self-abuse, and I just listed them right down on a piece of paper one day. I drew a line, and I started thinking about opposites. I started praying and asking God for opposites. When I take somebody through the sixth step, I don't just say, hey, ask God to remove these character defects that just came out in the fifth step from you. I'm real big on vision. I say, we ask God to take these away, and you're going to go towards these opposites. Go this direction. So they ask God to remove these and help me get towards these things. You know, if you're interested, I'll get you a copy of it. You know, if I don't have enough here, I don't think I have any here, but I have some in the car. If you're interested and you want to take a look at it, make up your own. Go through. When you're working with people, you'll start to see commonalities that we all carry, same character defects. Give them something to work towards. Give them a goal, a direction, you know. And I'll put back on my A hat. Actually, no, let me keep it off for 1 second. A guy that you've heard me talk about him a lot, Mark Houston, turned me on to this book. It took me years to find this book. Well, not really, literally years, but a month and a half, 2 months of hard work. I wanted to find it for years. Then I bothered to track this guy down, and he was on a what he calls a spiritual walkabout. This is a real spiritual guy. He just one day said, you know what, I have enough money and everything. He resigned from his job, put the money in the bank, and he started traveling around from AA meeting to AA meeting, just seeing where God wanted him to go. You know, put his computer in the storage. And I called every taper I knew. I called Glenn Kay. I called Smile God Loves You. I called all these different tape companies. I said, hey, if you know Mark, if you see him at any one of these doing a spiritual talk, I want to get a hold of him. I threw it out on the sea and let it up to God. I got an email. Mark's back. He's online. Here's his web address. Boom. I sent off an email to him. There are no coincidences. He happened to be living in Austin, Texas. There are no coincidences. That particular month, my monthly schedule happened to be laying over in Austin, Texas. The next day, after I emailed him, he said, yeah, come on down and see me. I was in Austin, Texas having coffee with the man. I got to see the front cover of this book. It had a town listed in it. I called Directory Assistance. The town in New York, it does not exist. There is no town by that name. And I said, well, it's got to exist. I called the post office. I called the state. I tried going through the list. And I said, wait a minute, you're going at it all wrong. God, show me how to find this. It came to me in meditation, tracked down the publisher. It had to get made somewhere. Called Pennsylvania. The woman's on vacation. Okay, God's telling me to wait. So a lady calls me up on the telephone. She's got to be 85, you know, a little crickety old voice. And she says, oh, yeah, they just printed that again. Let me get the address. Turns out it's a monastery in New York. There is no ISBN. It's not listed in the Library of Congress. I would not have been able to find this without God's help, I believe. And inside, it's an Episcopalian prayer book called St. Augustine's Prayer Book. I am not Episcopalian. They have done something under the Sacrament of Penance, and anybody that's Catholic knows about the Sacrament of Penance. They've taken the seven deadly sins, like we have in the 12 and 12, and they've broken them out in detail like I've never seen before. And this is what I use for a six-step now. And I learned this from Mark. The way you go through it is you ask yourself, am I guilty of this or am I not guilty of this? And just let me read a couple. Pride. It's putting self in the place of God as the center and object of your life, or some department thereof. It is the refusal to recognize your status as creatures dependent upon God for our existence and placed by Him in a specific relation to the rest of His creation. Guilty or not guilty? Guilty. You know, I just go through there. It brings me to a level of my character defects on a daily basis on how low I get. And there's some things in here I had to look up, words I didn't even know, you know. It has sentimentality, presumption, disobedience, vanity, arrogance, snobbery, angry, resentment, pugnacity, retaliation, envy, jealousy, malice, contempt, covetousness, inordinate ambition. Any workaholics in here? You don't want to read this section. Stay away from it. Domination, avarice. I had no idea what avarice was. Prodigality, you know, penuriousness, gluttony, intemperance, lack of discipline. It did two things. It forced me to get into a dictionary, and it really forced me to learn about myself and the things that I do. Great thing. If you're interested in, I now have a phone number for the Holy Cross Monastery in New York. If you're interested, I can track you down and get you a copy of one of these if you're interested in it. So that's my off-the-beaten-path six-step stuff. There's tremendous resources out there. Be quick to see where religious people are right. They can help you in this area. They've been studying it for 2,000 years now. On what to do. What did our Christian roots tell us? You know, and it works if you're Buddhist. It works if you believe in Zen. It works if you believe in crystals and tarot cards and everything else. I've seen it work. You can get through this. Does not matter. You know, be quick to see where religious people are right. There is freedom from your character defects, but you have to know they're there. 90% of the battle is realizing you got the problem. Then you can ask God to help you deal with it. If you don't know it's there, you're blind to it. And how, like Chris said, how do you know what you don't know? If you don't know it, you're doomed.
All right, we're gonna move into step seven now, correct?
Yeah.
Let me just read the paragraph. In the original manuscript, remember we read last night how it works from the original manuscript. It says in the original manuscript that we humbly ask God on our knees. To remove these defects of character, holding nothing back. What I would like to suggest, if everyone doesn't mind, is if we could do this prayer on our knees the way the original alcoholics wanted it done. Dr. Bob was great for making you do this on your knees up in his house. my Creator. I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. Great. Thank you, everybody. We have then completed step 7.
You'll notice on the guide on page 18, I put the meditation. This is usually where I have to put the drinking meditation. You know, does my lack of willingness have anything to do whether I'll drink again? And that's what I'm talking about. I've even had to use that meditation. I got a friend of mine, Frank. He's from, where the hell does he live? Sandy Hook or someplace down there. And he gave me a hard time about doing his 4-step. And he's got long-term sobriety, and he teaches the big book, and he does big book seminars and workshops and everything else. And he says, you know, take me through a 4-step. And I said, sure. And I started him down the path, and it was just before Christmas, and he balked real bad. You know, he said, I'll have it done in a month. A month came and went, and finally he called me up and says, hey, still not done. I'm still working on it. God hasn't motivated me. And I said, yeah, right, Frank. And at the time he was in sales. I said, go out to your trunk of your car and take out one of those bottles of whiskey that he gave you in sales, because he goes around and gives Christmas presents, and a lot of times you use a bottle of booze. And I had him put the bottle of booze on his kitchen table and lay his 4-step next to the bottle of booze, so that every day when he came down from upstairs in the morning, he had to walk past a bottle of whiskey and his 4-step and ask himself, which is easier? 4-step, bottle of booze. You know? It's a powerful meditation. You know? If you've been through step 10, what is this? One of the step 10 promises is the problem has been removed. Drinking is not our problem. What is our problem? Selfishness and self-centeredness. You know? Am I so selfish that I got my plan for my day, I don't have time to sit down and get closer to God and write some inventory? I've forgotten that that inventory has something to do with whether I'll drink again. I am not afraid to use alcohol. It is a wonderful tool. And the big book tells me, the guy's not sure, what does it tell him? Go drink. Try some controlled drinking if you're not sure. If you're alcoholic like us, we got one path, 12 steps. You want to do this? Or want me to do it?
What, the ice cream?
No, the 8 step. Or you don't want to take a break?
Yeah, we probably should.
Yeah, let's take one break today, and then we're going to run right through.
Okay, we're, it says, now we need more action. I love the way the big book always does that. You know, they're not about to let you rest on your laurels. It's always action, and otherwise we're going to find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. If you'll look at your resentments, you'll look at your harms to others, you'll find that there's a lot of information that can be transferred over onto what we like. We will like to use the amends card approach. I'll be going over that in a few minutes. But probably most of the information you're going to need for the amends cards is going to come from your inventory. We also told you earlier that the 4th step is going to be key to working the rest of the steps, and here's a case in point. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which is accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember that it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any length over victory from alcohol. And if you have any misgivings about putting somebody down on your amends list and then going out to make amends to them, it really is a process. Sometimes you don't have the power to be able to do that until you get to this point. I've seen too many of the people that I work with short-circuit the step process because they're looking ahead to amends. They figure that if they do a 4-step, they're going to end up having to make amends to Uncle Charlie or somebody who they're never going to make amends to Uncle Charlie no matter what. And a lot of times they're really short-circuiting the process because you're not the same person when you get to step 8 that you are before you do step 4. there's been a transformation process that happens. I tell a lot of my guys that don't worry about the amends now. You don't have the power to do the amends now. Just do each step to the best of your ability and take it one step at a time.
Out west, they call steps 8 and 9, correction, steps 6 and 7, the Great Oasis for a reason. People get up to 6 and 7, and they're looking over the horizon, and they're looking at 9. So how many times have you been in a meeting and people say, well, I'm working on step 6, or I'm working on removing my character defects. What's wrong with that sentence? The power removes the character defect. I mean, it's as simple as saying, okay, God, here's the warts, please remove them, next, you know, and you're on. It doesn't take a whole lot of time, you know.
Okay, here's an example on page 18 of an amends card. I like to use 5x7 cards. They're just big enough to put all the information you can on them. If you look at it on the front of the card, it's got the person's name. We're using John Smith here in Madison. It's got the person's address. It's got the person's phone number. So this is who they are and where they are. If you'll notice that there's a plus over on the top right-hand side. You put a plus if you are willing to go to the person right now, and if you're willing to do what they ask you to do to set right the wrong. If you're willing to do that now. If you're not willing to do it at this point in time, you can put a minus. The minuses can change into pluses very miraculously as you start in this process. You also number these cards. I like to let my guys number the ones that they're ready to do first. In other words, easiest ones toward the hardest ones. Because what will happen is they'll get rolling, they'll get some momentum going when they're out making amends, and they'll just get enthusiasm and they'll get momentum going, and you'll find that they are changing minuses into pluses and they're taking care of the harder and harder amends. Momentum is everything in the eighth and ninth step. It really is. You really have to keep moving. Too many people bog down and stop with their amends, you know, for one reason or another.
For those of you who aren't really familiar with our history, and no answers from this corner over here, how long did it take Dr. Bob to make amends? He made amends the same day he took his last drink. This process doesn't take a long time to get through if you're spiritually centered, you know. One of the things that I have the guys do with these eight-step cards is I have them make them up and not number them. Then we get together, and I help them number them. Because, you know, it's funny how the ego will creep back. You know, the first person they want to make amends to is that girlfriend that they broke up with 3 months ago. But, of course, they still don't have the hots for her, you know. Now we're deep down. It's really not the case. Or their ex-wife or whatever. There's usually a motive there. And the way I have them start doing it, easiest to hardest, same thing. You start with people that love you unconditionally. As long as there's not terrible, like, sex harms or something, you know, a child abuse or something like that, you start with parents. They love you unconditionally. They're a piece of cake, a man. You know, kids, they love you. They're your parent. You know, you're their parent. They love you unconditionally. They're a piece of cake. Knock those things out. And then, like I said, described the other day, you know, I look at the tornado. We go through the tornado. The people that go to the bottom of the list are the people who we hurt the most, and those are usually the people we've had sex with. Long-term, close personal relationships, because we know the chinks in each other's armors. So wives, ex-wives, girlfriends, mistresses, they go to the very bottom of the list. You know, because some of those people you may not even be making amends to if there's going to be harm. You know, if it's an ex-wife, it may be harm caused there. And you're going to need some spiritual work before you get there. You know, so I always like to sit down and I check everything with guys when it goes through the amends process. And it's an area where most guys will want their ego comes back that fast. They'll go through 6, they'll go through 7, they'll make their cards, and next thing you know, they'll come back to you and they'll go, yeah, I'm on my 5th card. And you're like, excuse me? You know, and they've been off, and then you start talking to them about it, at some of these good experiences they've had, and chances are they've hurt somebody making amends. You're like, well, yeah, that one didn't go quite the way I thought it was going to. And trust me, there is nothing worse in this world than having to go make amends for making amends when you weren't ready to make amends. It really bites. I've been there. You don't want to do it.
You can definitely cause some harm. I also was subject to the problem of wanting to make amends to my last 7 girlfriends all in 1 week, you know, just my motives weren't really all that good probably, and my sponsor stomped me on it. So
it's sort of like my sponsor who came up here for this big book weekend, and he just by coincidence happened to throw a set of skis on the top of the car, and he's not in this room today. You know, what was his motivation for coming to Vermont?
He started jonesing for the powder, you know. But one of the things I make clear to the people that I work with, Dave's got it a little differently here than the way I do it, and that's fine. On the front of the card, I have them write the harms that they're clear on. You know, exactly what harms are you clear on? And sometimes I have to help them. Maybe we have to dig back into the fourth step and take a look. And on the back, I ask them to write down the approach. You know, we sit down and we discuss a proper approach. There's really two parts to an amends. There's an approach, and that means it's when you go face to face with the person, and Dave and I both believe that face to face, when at all possible, is the best way to do an amends. Somebody was telling me that they did all their amends through the phone, and I asked them, did you harm them over the phone? You know, if you harm them to their person, you might want to make amends to their person. And there is times when a letter is appropriate, but more often than not, the spiritual exercise can best be completed face to face. So I go over the approach with them. You know, how are you gonna handle the approach? If you look down at this card, there's some questions here. We've also found through our own experience and our experience working with others that these are three great, great questions to ask after you've come clean with the harms that you're clear on to the person, you know. Question number one, are there any more harms that I've caused you which I may not know about? And they'll tell you if there is, usually. Question number two, do you need to tell me how any of this hurt you? This is kind of a healing exercise for the person. Let's say it's a relationship amend. You'll get probably 2 hours of how you hurt them. And it's allowing the other person to heal, you know?
Think about it. You may have taken, let's say, a month to write your fourth step, and then you fifth-stepped it. You spent some serious spiritual time with your higher power going through a formal process to heal. Now, you're walking into this person's life, and you're going to open up Pandora's box, and you're going to talk about the harm you caused to them. This is their time to heal. What you're going to do is bring this stuff out and say, I know I've caused you this harm, and they're going to get that venom out of them. And part of it's going to be dumped on you, but you're going to be safe and protected because you have power. You've got a higher power to keep you safe and protected, you know, and you're going to watch them heal. I've had a number of amends where they are spitting bullets at me. You F and F this, and I can't believe you did this to me. And by the time we're done, they're crying and they're hugging me as I walk out the door, asking me to come back. And you get to watch them heal right in front of your eyes by these three questions.
It's an incredible experience. One of my experiences was I came in filled with resentment to Alcoholics Anonymous. You want to know why? Because my wife left me when I needed her the most. You know? Like, can you imagine? She abandoned me. That's how I felt. I got through the process, and I came to realize in my fourth step that she would have had to have been out of her mind to stay with me. You know what I mean? What I was doing? She'd have been certifiable. You could have taken her away if she'd stayed with me. So I got to that point, and she had wanted to get away from me so bad, she moved to Colorado to get away from me. So I wasn't seeing her that often. Well, I picked the time to make the approach, and it was her father's funeral. She flew back into New Jersey. So I asked, I go, you know, can I have a talk with you, after a bit? And we took a walk, and I laid out the harms that I was clear on. And you got to understand, I was only a couple of years sober. I wasn't clear on a whole lot. She told me. She goes, that's nothing. You know, those are good days you were talking about. And she started to lay some stuff on me that I had done, but I had buried it because it was just so ugly. You know how you can bury those memories? And it was a healing process for her. It hurt me a little, but like Dave said, I was safe and protected. I was following the spiritual exercise. Now, here's the question that'll show just how serious you are. Is there anything I can do to correct this wrong? And unless it's an absolutely ridiculous request, consider it God talking. You know, this is how you can correct the wrong. This is how you can set right the wrong. And that's really the process in the ninth step. So this is what you have on the card. And it's also good to have a card because I don't know about anybody else, but sometimes I get tongue-tied in the middle of an amends. Sometimes it's a very emotional. Sometimes I have some fear. Sometimes I have some anxiety. And sometimes I'm like, you know. And to have a card in my back pocket, sometimes I can refer to it, and it puts me right back into what I have to do, you know, why I'm doing it and exactly what I have to do. It's a really good help. You know what I mean?
You know, there's a whole bunch. This is a card that I use. And Chris said his cards go a little bit different. It's basically the same information, just how you lay it out. I designed it so that the front of the card is for me. It even says that at the top. This is everything I need to know before I go to do this amend, so I can do my spiritual preparation. It's the instructions from the big book, what I'm supposed to tell them. Because a lot of times you get up there and you knock on the door, and then all of a sudden your mind goes click, and you go blank. I do it. I got it on computer, so I print it out on 3x5 cards, and I keep it in my pocket. It's nice. You know, if I brain fart, I can just, there it is. And I do not recommend reading it off the card, because then it doesn't sound like it's coming from the heart. But if you need to, fits right in the palm of your hand, just kind of glance at it. Oh, this is what I need to talk about. You'll notice on the back of the card, it's for them. And that's where I put down the harms that I know that I'm clear on. That's what comes from the fifth step work. I know I'm clear on these harms. And you'll notice after each one of the questions, there's an instruction. First question is, shut up and listen. Let them get out whatever they're going to have to. And a lot of times when they're dumping, I'm praying. Because some of the stuff is really stinging, you know, and it does not feel comfortable. I'm not going to lie to you. It's an uncomfortable position to be in, but I have to keep conscious that I'm protected. Get to question two. Shut up and listen. Let them get the venom out. Question number three, I said write it down. You notice how there's the A at the bottom? No matter what they say, no matter what it is, write it down. And then I take it back with me to my sponsor, I pray about it, and I ask my sponsor for direction. Now, if it's an old girlfriend and she says, yeah, I want you to get back in a relationship with me and I'm married now, chances are that's probably not a good thing to do. You know? No matter what comes on, I don't get to make the decision because I can still capable of my ego twisting my thought process. I check it with somebody else and say, hey, do you think this is reasonable? Does this person ask me to do with this? And if they say, yeah, we're off, man. I'm ready to go. You know, the other nice thing about the numbering system is it's a way for your sponsor to check you. You know, if I come to you, and I do it with all the guys that I run into in meetings, if I know that you're in the card system and I know who your sponsor is, guys avoid me like the plague because I walk up and I usually ask a series of questions. I care enough about people not to kill you. I'll walk up to you and I'll see the mask that we wear when we walk into the meeting. I'm fine, you know. I'll walk up and I'll say, hey, how's your spirituality? Fine. I'm like, oh, really? You know, where are you in the steps? I'm working them all. No, that doesn't cut it with me. Come on. What specific? Well, I'm on step 8, or I'm on step 9. I love when they say I'm step 9. I'm like, great. What number are you on? Because I know they do use numbered cards. Well, I'm on number 10. I'm like, great. I turn around and walk away. I make a mental note. Joe's on his 10th card. Guess what? Next week, same grilling. And if he says I'm on the same number, we're going to have a little talk. You know, who's your sponsor? What, is your sponsor now? You've been sitting on this card? You're resting on your laurels? You want to go to the liquor store? Let's go. Come on. You know? And people avoid you very quickly.